One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back to another episode of Within the Lines, a podcast where two best friends use their patent-pending movie ranking scale to determine the true quality of a film. Today is Friday, April 26, 2024, and today we're reviewing a potential candidate for Dad Action Movie of the Year. That is The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And for the second week in a row, we are coming at you digitally. I was a little under the weather and sick last week. Tyler, now it's your turn.
Yeah, but it's all right. We're powering through.
Yes, yes, it is. It is all right indeed, Ty. I miss your beautiful face. I may or may not have got you sick. I feel terrible about it. You keep saying it's not me. I don't think that's very true. I appreciate your friendship, but horrible to hear you in this way.
You're giving me too much credit. I said you didn't get Xander sick. I entirely think you got me sick.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Well, then screw me. Am I right? I'm excited, Ty. This was an interesting movie. I think it's a movie. I don't know. Once again, I'm always excited to hear your takes, but another movie where I'm very excited to see what you thought. So I think it's going to make for a good conversation.
Yeah, I can't wait, man.
Let's get into the show. 60% of the time, it works every time. John Stamos. What? We just become best friends. Yep. I don't feel so good. Smash! I'm not fucking leaving.
The show goes on! With Britain on the brink of losing World War II, an unofficial task force is put together to sabotage the Nazi U-boats and help swing the tide of the war.
It's a war movie, baby. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Yeah. Ungentle. I'm going to butcher the name of this movie 20 times in this podcast.
It's a mouthful. I almost had to extend out our Google sheet to fit the entire title, but then I just abbreviated warfare to war and it fits.
Oh, okay. I just have it as Ministry Warfare on my personal sheet, so a little bit different for me, but I guess, hey, it's all the same either way, right?
Yeah. Now, Jay, this movie, you were saying at the top how potential candidate for Dad Action Movie of the Year.
Correct.
I have not spent enough time with Guy Ritchie's catalog, obviously the director of this film. Mm-hmm. I'm just like looking through it and knowing like what some people have said about these different movies. At this point, I just feel like anytime he directs one, it immediately is going to fall into this category.
Mm. Into Dad Action of the Year or just Dad Action in general?
Yeah. No, just like a potential nominee. Because he has, like, I've heard a lot of things about The Man Called Uncle. Heard that's very good. He's done, what was the other one that I was seeing here? Sherlock Holmes, which is just, like, kind of ridiculous shit with Robert Downey Jr. Couldn't think of his name right there. Mm-hmm. The guy who hates Marvel. Mm-hmm. Is that a couple other ones? The Covenant, which was already on our nominees last year.
Yeah, we didn't even see it. It was a nominee. That's how strong it was.
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like this guy really thrives with dad action movies.
And then he throws in a little, you know, a little Aladdin just to throw everyone off a little bit in 2019. So I have seen that one. I can confirm, not a dad action movie.
No, it is not. But that's different. You know, that was like a crossover event.
Now, this movie fascinates me because it opens up with a nice little title card, and it says that this story was unveiled in what, like 2016, in Winston Churchill's like undiscovered, like his memoir,
declassified documents.
Yeah, like that is so fascinating to me. There was something that happened like this for so long. Operation Postmaster is the official name of the operation, and we just like, maybe we knew about it, but we didn't know the exact details. We didn't know he was literally working against his own country to get this done. And just, it's just another example to me. My first takeaway, and it's something I've talked about here on the podcast before, is it just makes me mad because we don't teach history right, ever. It's just like, history could be so cool. Is this very fictionalized? Yeah, probably. It literally says on Wikipedia it is a heavily fictionalized version of Operation Postmaster. But you get the gist of it. Like, does it really matter what happened on April 7th or what happened, what the guy's name was, or the exact date of this event? These are all the things we quiz for, all the things we ask our kids to study. No, what happened, what matters is you kind of understand what happened and you understand the implications, the real world implications of that. I don't know what of this is fictionalized, but I know that they wanted to get the U-boats. You know, they wanted to, the U-boats were kind of controlling the war. They wanted a way to cut those U-boats out. So they assembled a badass team to do that by cutting the snake off from the source. So that's what I learned. And then I learned, you know, it helped the United States come to the war, all that stuff. I learned a lot in this. And who cares if there was a lot of fictionalized things of, you know, a guy shooting bow and arrow through people's hearts? That makes it badass.
Yeah, I like to, in my own headcanon, I imagine that part's real.
Oh, okay. That's actually the most accurate part of this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they actually didn't do anything with U-boats. It's all based on some dude that just went around killing guys with a bow and arrow. And then they designed a fake mission for him to be a part of this movie.
I just... Man, like, I don't know. If I had to watch a movie like this in high school, probably can't show it, rated R, a lot of gore. But I would just be all for it, man, you know? And I wish it's history is just inherently cool, and I've found myself getting more and more interested in it as I get older, because it's just like, it's human nature to like want to know what just happened and gossip a little bit, and that's all history really is. And we just terribly, terribly, terribly treat it in schools and make it this horrible, boring thing that no one likes, and it's like the least popular subject in schools. So, just another reminder of the failure of the American education system here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big time. Because I mean, this pretty sick. I would have been interested in stuff like this in high school.
Yeah, and. And it goes down a rabbit hole. I mean, every time we watch anything that's history related, I always like do my own, you know, quick research to research it. And it's things like Hamilton, you know, researching Alexander Hamilton, all that stuff. Freaking Oppenheimer is the top ranked movie on our scale of all time, tied with Infinity War. Like, you can make historical movies and make it interesting. Now, sometimes you can make historical movies and make them boring and way too long in a money laundering scheme like Killers of the Flower Moon, but you can make them interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just in our top 10, we got Oppenheimer, which is obviously history. And then we jump back down to 1917, which is World War One, right there at number 9. Another fantastic, very interesting war movie. Like, there is a lot of, you know, Hamilton up there. History can be cool. Like, the only stories that get told are the cool stories. Make them interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean... And I just remember European history, AP European history, my sophomore year. Granted, my teacher had a heart attack and was out for half the year. And my final one semester was watching the Lincoln film for a European history class. But I don't remember ever learning about Operation Postmaster in this. I just remember learning, remember this date. I know Franz Ferdinand, he was the guy they tried killing for the start of World War One. I know that. But like, just little shit no one cares about, man. And this movie should be an eye-opener to everyone. And it's frustrating me that it doesn't seem to be that, because it's only made $11.5 million in the box office so far. People are not going out to see this movie.
I got to be honest. I feel like the name is really fucking hurting it.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful. I don't think people are talking. Like, word of mouth is such a big seller. And when you can't say the word out of your mouth, that hurts things.
Yeah. No, it 100%. Maybe should have leaned on Nazis in the title. Maybe... something with U-boats, maybe just, I don't know. I don't know what they could have done different, but yeah, it's definitely a not a great name for sure.
Yeah, which sucks because it is getting good reviews. I mean, it's currently sitting 71% critics, but 93 audience. So the very few people who are going out and watching it, having a blast.
Yeah, I will say when I went to Cinemark Jess Ranch, actually, not a movie club member, unfortunately, just because the movie theater I live so close to, Civic Plaza, literally doesn't have, has like three showtimes a day, and I had to go later in the day, or was it later in the day? I don't even remember. Yeah, later in the day on Wednesday, and Cinemark was the only one that had it, and there was only like, I don't know, four people in the theater. Riley thought the theater was packed. It was one of the theaters with D-Box, so all the D-Box seats were X'd off, so she's a little stressed. Bought us tickets for the very top row, and I kept making fun of her that I had to bring my binoculars, and she was getting very mad very quickly at all my smart remarks. But she said she prefers very top row, actually. She said, I like this way more than where we normally sit. I don't. What's your take, Ty? Are you a top row guy?
I don't dislike it. It depends on the theater. So Cinemark Jess Ranch, really, really smart. Like the walls that separate in between like the seats in front of you, they're just like, they're just kind of like railing where you can still kind of see through them. So you're not like losing anything if you're up too high and you got to look like kind of down on the screen, not cutting anything off. Works well. Civic Plaza, they got solid walls. You'll miss the bottom 5, maybe 10% of the screen. Mm-hmm. Hate that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm like a three rows from the top kind of guy myself. I mean, you made us sit right in front of the screen for Oppenheimer, or you wanted us to at least. Dune. I'm like three rows from the top. That's the sweet spot for me.
Yeah. I like casual watching, I'm okay like middle top. I still stand by wanting those seats in Dune. I want to be encapsulated in IMAX.
I feel like it'd give me a little bit of a headache if I'm too close. Yeah.
No, I want a headache.
Speaking of movie theaters, kind of surprised this movie was even in theaters to begin with. I'm glad it was. I'm glad I got to see it in the big screen. But this just feels like the classic HBO Max direct to streaming, or even better, Amazon Prime Video. Like, is this movie any different than Roadhouse? Is this movie any different than, well, it is different than The Tomorrow War because it's actually good. I can tell you it has a higher score than Tomorrow War for me. But is it any different? There was that one with Michael B. Jordan, the spy movie. I don't remember what it was. This is just right up that alley. And we're probably, the failure of this at the box office, we're probably coming to a place where less and less of these are going to be in theaters. You know, we're not going to get Plane in theaters. We're not going to get these other ones. But while we have them, we got to appreciate them because I'm kind of shocked this was actually in theaters.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. It definitely felt like something that would have thrived on streaming. But, I mean, I am glad that it made it to theaters. Now, just with the box office and, like, people not going out to see this movie, I'm looking at Guy Ritchie's filmography. Mm-hmm. I feel like he is someone where, like, everyone knows his name. Not everyone, but, like, people in the movie world know his name. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't get people in seats.
Mm-mm. No.
He's got Aladdin. That one doesn't count. 1 billion. Yeah. We have the Sherlock Holmes sequel at 543. And then we have a giant Sherlock Holmes 1 at 524. So, like, that series, okay. Mm-hmm. And then it's such a jump down to 148 million. 115 million, 107 million, which, like, I don't know. I feel like he's someone who makes movies with, you know, notable people in them. You would expect it to have a couple more higher box office successes than that.
Yeah, you mentioned that Guy Ritchie is a familiar name, at least in the movie industry. I agree with you, but then, like, thinking about it, I think Guy Ritchie just has the perfect, like, yeah, I know that guy name. Like, even if you don't know who Guy Ritchie is, like, I guarantee I ask my dad, and well, sometimes I think he just pretends to know people when he doesn't because he doesn't want me to, like, judge him. But I guarantee he was like, oh, dad, yeah, Guy Ritchie's making a new movie. You know Guy Ritchie, right? He'd be like, oh, yeah, I know Guy Ritchie. And he would, like, actually think he does. He wouldn't be pretending. Like, I just think he has, like, a I know that guy name, even if you everyone thinks they know Guy Ritchie.
That's fair. I mean, I don't totally disagree with you. It's a perfect Hollywood name.
It's just Guy Ritchie. Is that his real name? Is his real name Guy Stewart Ritchie? Great name.
Fantastic name. Guy. Guy's a great name. Not enough people get named Guy anymore.
if you have a second child, a second son, you just name Guy Wooten.
I'm going to have to go to war for that, but I would do it.
Hey, man, anything's possible. Your Saints just drafted Kool-Aid McKinstry, so, you know.
Goddamn right.
I mean, Kool-Aid's not
Kool-Aid
his real
to the top.
First name, but got to get yourself a Kool-Aid jersey, I think. We were robbed of Jameis Winston.
Unfortunately, Kool-Aid's his first name, but I think I can get a custom-made Kool-Aid jersey.
It would be a massive, massive missed opportunity if the Saints weren't selling like, obviously, his official jersey will say McKinstry, but they have to make jerseys that say Kool-Aid on the back. Like, they just have to.
It's just too cool of a name not to.
Yeah. I mean, you know how many people down south in New Orleans would buy a fucking Kool-Aid jersey?
I know I would. It's all the way over here in California.
It's just great. I was going to say he could wear number one, but looks like someone on the roster is already number one. So, I don't know. He could buy that number off. Alante Taylor. I don't know. Never heard of that guy, Ty. Is he important?
He's okay. He can buy it off him for sure.
Cool. Let's jump into speaking of weird names, let's jump into the movie, The Ministry. I already forgot it. See, I have to have a tab open at all times to remember it. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Plot/story, Ty. I mentioned at the top, it's movies like this that make me upset that we don't teach history in better ways. It's just a cool story. Yeah, is there a lot of fictionalized elements? Sure. But there's always that reminder of like, wow, this at least somewhat happened in real life. Like the whole strategy of, you know, having to cut off the supplies of the U-boats because they can't defeat the U-boats and how important this is to the overall realm of the war. But also, I like a good war movie where, you know, as the one Infinity War review said, it's not the fate of the world on the line. It's not the fate of the universe. It's just the fate of, in this case, I mean, kind of the war, but like it's a smaller story within the war, you know, like this didn't necessarily.
Yeah.
This wasn't like, hey, finish this mission and we win the war. This was, hey, finish this mission. We get an advantage for the rest of the war. We all know what happened there, baby. The Nazis were defeated. But I like movies like that, like 1917, where literally the whole movie was just about a guy trying to deliver a message to another general about an attack. Like it's just. And bring to life these stories, I think. Maybe we can get like a war cinematic universe where we just make a bunch of these movies about different little stories in war. And then they all come together in this giant war, which is just World War II. I guess that's kind of what Infinity War was at the end of the day. I like these self-contained. The whole stake of the war isn't, you know, on at the line. I thought there was, you know. There were some obviously like I guarantee the most fictionalized elements might have been the whole side story with the female and seducing the German officer. I'm sure there might have been some sort of realism in there, but maybe that was probably stretched a little bit, you know, with some of the things they were doing there. But I think it all still made sense. It all was cohesive and it came together. I don't think it was necessarily breaking down like. It's a difference between plot and story. Like, I don't think there was like a, I think it told a really cool story, but I don't think there was like these amazing plot beats and like, you know, they reinvented the way they told a movie across 2 hours and all that stuff. I gave it a 14 out of 20, Ty.
Yeah. I agree with pretty much everything that you said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking a look here to try and see how much of it's real. This quote says, the story itself and the elements are true, but characters get combined and recreated and brought to life with a lot more gruesomeness than in the historical record. I'm going to stop reading because they're gonna say somewhere that no one ever used a bow and arrow, and it's going to really hurt my feelings. So I'm at a 14 out of 20 also. I think it's a cool story. I do like how you're saying it's one of the smaller scale events that is obviously very impactful for the bigger picture, but it's not this big overarching story of the war on all these different fronts and how they're winning it. It's one mission, isolated thing, one team, couple of guys, and it makes for a more personal war story where you're just watching this event unfold. Thought the pacing was good, liked how they kind of set everything up and the little, you know, improv kind of shit at the end where they like switch it around and everything. So I had a fun time with it. I think the story was really good and did a great job of teaching me some stuff about World War II.
Yeah, if I'm picking nits, I think they kind of set this movie up. I don't know if stuff got like left off the cutting room floor, but they set this movie up as not set it up, but like, you know, the first time we see them, they're on the boat. And then I was almost thinking we were going to get like this kind of boat adventure. And then we got more of like the seducing the German officer and kind of like the special ops where we go back to the boat and there was one scene where they encounter a British warship. And then besides that, it was just like, oh, they have 10 more days to get here. And then next scene, they were just there or they were about to be there, you know, and they met with the prince of the island, whatever they called him. You know, he used his militia to help him out. Like that portion of the movie felt a little fast forwarded through. But honestly, like if some stuff got left on the cutting room floor, I'm fine with it. Because, you know, if they were sitting there with a two hour, 45 minute movie and they were just like, hey, let's not drag this out. You know, we always say on movies like this that sometimes you can cut 30 minutes and it's better. And this was a case where it felt like maybe there was supposed to be a little bit more substance there, but I'm not necessarily like losing sleep that it wasn't there, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I also think that part of the issue of telling these cool historical events is, realistically, like they probably didn't even do that fucking heist to get that guy onto the team.
Yeah.
Like they did where they went to that island and killed all those dudes. Like that probably never fucking happened, but they wanted another action sequence. Realistically, it was probably like a secret force that really boring sailed to the spot, stole some boats, blew some shit up and took off. But yeah, you can't have one action sequence in it. So I think what they did is kind of create that side story to expand on the cooler event that happened. Add on a couple, you know, an extra action sequence. So I'm sure they are limited in what they can do with that. But I don't know how they do it. Lie to me some more. Go capture someone else who's hostage on the way over to give me another bitchin' action sequence, because that was super fucking cool. And yeah, give me less of the girl and the like guy throwing all the parties and shit.
So you're telling me, Ty, that the scene where four gentlemen took out an entire Nazi base by themselves probably was fictionalized?
I am saying that, yeah. Especially, well, all except for the fact of the guy using the bow and arrow to help do that.
Got it.
That part was probably still true.
Got it. Yeah, there was times in this movie where I was like, wow, this is ridiculous. Like, I get, like, these guys are supposed to be billed as, like, these awesome assassins or whatever, and, you know, special ops team, but it was kind of like, all right, like, come on now. Like, you know, the Nazis captured all of Europe. They can't be this inept. You know what I mean?
Very true, but also, these guys are fucking badasses, so it makes for a fun movie.
True, and I shouldn't ever complain about a movie making Nazis look inept. Like, who am I to argue that Nazis should look better, like, better fighters, you know?
Yeah. Weird of you to try and stand up for the Nazis there, but I think we'll move past it.
Key elements, Ty. As a father, the only father on this podcast, why don't you lead the way?
Yeah. Look, man, it's dad action. There was a guy talking about how he wanted to fill a barrel full of Nazi hearts. That's awesome.
Literally ripped a heart out, too. We saw him holding a heart in his palm.
Just playing around with a fucking Nazi heart in his palm. That's sick. Love that. Lots of big explosions, lots of blowing shit up. I wish we would have got more of it, but even like the submarine scene where they go onto it and they're like in the different corridors, just kind of fighting people and shit. Mm-hmm. That's super cool. My biggest complaint is there wasn't enough of the dad action, because when it was on screen, it was fantastic. I'm at a 17 out of 20. Really liked the couple of action sequences that they had on here. I liked the comedy. It was fairly funny movie. I had a really good time like laughing and being thoroughly entertained by that. Yeah, I mean, the guy had a bow and arrow and he was ripping out Nazi hearts. That's sick.
Yeah, the dad action beats of this were all great. The bow and arrow to the hearts, the secret mission, the first scene where they're on the boat and they're being interrogated by the Nazis, and then they just, you know, go crazy. They're slitting the guy's throat and, you know, doing all like creative ways to kill all these different Nazis throughout. You know, the boat heist scene. You know, that was great. The little creative humor that why am I forgetting his name right now? Henry Cavill would add, you know, killing these people and everything. Like, it checked all the dad action boxes. There could have been more. I think there's just a little bit extra of a level of dad action, and you could take it both ways. You could take it the serious way where it's like John Wick, where, I mean, John Wick is, it's serious, but it's almost unserious how much action there is. But, like, that's more of a serious way. Or you could take it more in the ludicrous dad action way of a movie like Violent Night. And I think this falls
– yeah,
this is very good, but it doesn't reach that quite pinnacle of dad action that those two movies probably did for different reasons. So I gave it an 18. I agree with you. Same thing. Like, I don't think I needed all that, you know, love, romance, whatever, seducing the guy. But then again, this movie's really short if they don't do that, unless they just add a lot more action movies. But they had to make a movie that everyone could go enjoy. You know, I think about my parents. This is a movie that I think both my parents are going to like, because my dad's going to get his dad action kick, and my mom's going to get, you know, the romance, you know, seducing the guy, whatever angle, you know, and there's comedy that both of them will like. So I think this kind of checks... This kind of checks everyone's box, every adult's box at least. Might not be a kid's movie, but I for that reason, like, makes sense why they did it, even if they didn't go full dad action.
Yeah, no, I that's a great point on there. But, man, lots of fun while they're doing it. Henry Cavill is very entertaining and joking. And then Alan Ritchson, who is just a giant human being, was fantastic in every possible action way in this movie. He just kept the dad action rolling throughout. Whenever you were getting low, they put him on screen, and he just kept going.
He was a menacing force. We did our bouncers draft with Josh a few weeks ago, and if this movie would have came out before, then he might have been a first-round pick.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't watched the Jack Reacher series, but I know he's the star of it. I feel like if I would have watched that, I would have drafted him.
Yeah, maybe. I actually want to speak on Mr. Alan Ritchson specifically, but we'll wait till we get to the proper part of the movie ranking scale. For now, we'll jump into visuals / cinematography, Ty. Look, the movie looks good. Like, and this is always the thing with like movies that have decent budgets. Like, they always look good. It's really hard to make a movie that looks really, really bad nowadays. I mean, Madam Web did get a 1 in visual cinematography, so
deservedly so.
But everything else for me has gotten double digits. The lowest score I've given besides Madam Web is 13. So maybe the scale is a little bit flawed. But look, we're seeing big budget movies in theaters. They should at least look decent when they don't include a lot of like bad CGI and everything. And this movie, like, I thought it looked good for what it was. I mean, when you grade it on a curve, it probably just looks average. You know, they had fun with the action scenes and everything. I don't think this is a movie. There wasn't anything sitting here, standing here today with you where I'm like looking back, thinking about it. Like, man, that one shot was really cool. That one angle they did was really cool. Like, nothing really stands out in my head. So for that reason, I'm kind of giving it my run of the mill. It was still good, but wasn't like, didn't blow me away. You know, the action was good for what it was, but I've seen better. I gave it a 14 out of 20.
Yeah. You're talking to an echo chamber right now, because I'm just saying all the same stuff you're going to say here. Only thing that I can think of that like really stood out and looked cool, really bitchin' explosions. Blew up a lot of shit in this movie. Love me a good explosion. I think the setting for a couple of the fights was pretty cool. Like I said, on that submarine and then like looking through the glass and seeing him just like use an axe to chop people down through the door. Cool shot, but really nothing that blows me away. No overhead one shots like John Wick. So yeah, I'm at a 14 out of 20 also. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I mean, it's good for what it is, you know, and like there's some creative stylistic choices in there that definitely, you know, add to it. But again, in today's age, I don't think it necessarily added much more to the table than we don't see almost every week when we watch a movie here. So like I compared this to Roadhouse and like, how different was this than Roadhouse? Obviously, it's a different type of dad action. Roadhouse, more hand-to-hand combat. This is, you know, guns and whatnot. Some hand-to-hand combat, but mostly just guns and bows and arrows and sledgehammers. So, like, there isn't really a big difference. And both things got the same score unintentionally. So that checks out there. Mm-hmm. Characters. I just want to touch on Alan Ritchson because I didn't know what I knew him from. I knew him, but had no idea, like, why I knew his face. And then I realized right now, looking at his filmography, that he was the very, very, very bad agent that I absolutely obliterated in Fast X. Agent
Correct.
X.
Yeah.
Absolutely obliterated him. I said, this guy can't act. What is he doing? We talked about, you know, he was in the Blue Mountain State movie. I'm sure he was probably in the show, too. Yeah, he was. And I just was like, I don't see it. Like, this guy was terrible, blah, 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 blah. Glad I didn't know it was him into this because it might have tainted me because I thought he was great in this. But look, he didn't have to talk that much. He just talked with a Swedish accent a little bit and then just murdered a lot of people. Typecast him into this, guys. Like, don't make him do bad agent fucking lingo. Going to say ironic, not ironic, but like just dumb quotes that make no sense. Like, just let him kill some people. Give him a funny accent and let him go to work. He impressed me in this.
Yeah, I mean, very good in this. Very, very good. he didn't have a lot to work with in Fast X. I can't blame him for that. I've seen it. He's very good comedic timing, comedic chops in Blue Mountain State. I've seen him in the Titans series, which is like the live action Teen Titans. Mm-hmm. Pretty good in that. I know I've heard nothing but good things about the Reacher series, like I've said. And in this, look, he didn't talk a lot, but God damn it, wasn't he funny with that little Swedish accent when he was talking, cracking jokes and not ripping out hearts. Also, I don't care what it's in. He needs tiny little glasses and everything he's in from now on.
Why is that?
It's just so ridiculous with a man that big and glasses that tiny.
Fair enough. That was some visual humor for you. Besides him, yeah. Henry Cavill, however you say his name, he's a good actor, man. I don't know. Maybe I'm making this up in my head, but I feel like people don't love Henry Cavill. Like, I feel like maybe he gets a little bit of like a bad rep because of, you know, the Superman, and even though I don't even think he's that bad in Superman. I thought he was a just fine Superman. Yeah, Batman versus Superman, whatever. That was a little bad. But like, he had that, and then he had the whole thing with the show, The Witcher, where he pulled out of it. And I think people liked him in The Witcher, but I still don't think people liked that he pulled out. I don't know. I feel like Henry Cavill just has this, like, he's just an empty-headed action star. And look, I liked him when he was in Argyle. I liked him when he was in this. I think we need to – I'm going to start a petition to get Henry Cavill into, like, more serious roles. I think he needs to have, like a Robert Downey Jr. role, you know, in an Oscar movie where everyone's like, damn, Henry Cavill can act. Because I thought he did really well in this for what he had to do. So I was very impressed with him.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I like him in literally everything that I've seen him in. I like him as Superman. I like him as, I think he's a fantastic Sherlock Holmes as Enola Holmes' brother, yes, in those series.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
I've watched a little bit of Witcher and very good in that. Argyle, I liked him in Argyle. Just him, small scenes. I've yet to see something with him in it where I'm like, ugh, like that was shitty. Like the guy just has so much charisma, and was really enjoyable whenever he was on screen. Like lots of jokes, lots of charisma. Thoroughly enjoyed his character in this movie and his performance of that character. I'm trying to take a look at who else is on here. I have a nominee for They Wish They Could Have Casted This Person for this movie.
So do I. I'm interested to hear what you say. Let's see if we agree.
I'm going to go love interest Ana de Armas.
You took the words right out of my mouth because I thought it was Ana de Armas.
Yeah. Yeah, I entirely did. And then I looked and I was like as we were watching more, I was like, I don't know who this is. And I look on her IMDb and like, I know a lot of things that she's in, and I don't remember her being in them. Mm-hmm. But I was like, damn, they really wanted Ana de Armas for this.
No, 100% they wanted Ana de Armas. I thought it was her. I was like, and I still don't really like feel like I know who Ana de Armas is. Like, I know her name, but everyone always talks about her, and I don't think I've seen very many movies that she's actually in. I thought
you've
this
seen
was
the
her.
Gray Man.
Oh, see, there we go. I thought this was her. Not having like a lot of Ana de Armas information in my brain. I was like, oh, this is Ana de Armas. Wasn't her. Not at all.
So, yeah, I mean, you I'm glad we both came to that.
Yeah, the committee has to write that down. So I know, I think the committee's taking notes, hopefully.
Oh, it is. It is.
I had the thought that that was like their ideal typecasting. You know, I agree with you there. I also thought there was another one, not for the award, because I think Ana de Armas, home run, that's exactly what this award is. I think there's a world where Gal Gadot gets this role and she's just so bad in it and just ruins the movie for you, Tyler. Like, I could see Gal Gadot. Ana de Armas was number one, but after they didn't land her, they were probably like, ooh, is Gal still available? Are we too late in the process? And it was too late in the process because I could definitely see them casting her in this type of movie, in this role.
No, I mean, you're definitely right. And I'm glad they didn't use their, hey, Superman, call up Wonder Woman. Let's get her in this, because it would have significantly decreased my enjoyment in this film.
Oh, man. Gal Gadot needs more movies coming out. I want to review a Gal Gadot movie. The next one's not Snow White till next year.
I'm glad people have stopped hiring her, because she's, outside of like one Wonder Woman movie, she's not that good, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to argue with you. Not, she'll be in the Fast and Furious movies again. That's fun. Also, the rest of the cast, I thought it was just a charming cast all around, ensemble cast. Henry Golding, I think he's solid. I thought all the little henchmen guys were great. I thought the, Mr. Heron, the little prince guy. Prince guy. He wasn't little, but I thought he was good. He was actually in Dune and Dune too. He played Jamis?
Yeah. I think he's one of the
Oh, that's not who I'm thinking of then.
Sandwalkers.
That's not the same actor, but who is the guy that is it Mr. Heron? He does not look the same in this movie as he does in Dune. He looks much older in this movie if that's the same person.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is the same person. This guy was in Dune. He's one of the sand. I think he's only in Dune 1, because I think he's the guy he fights and he kills.
He was in flashbacks. Flashbacks in Dune 2. You know, they had like flashbacks and like some visions and stuff. He does not look the same in these two movies. He looks very old in this. Like, not very.
I think
old,
they did
older.
Age him up. I think they did age him up just a little bit, but definitely same guy.
I thought the guy who played the German general, even though we could have used maybe less of this. Just the perfect German, like, typecast. I mean, the gentleman is German. His name is Til Schweiger. If you look at his filmography, it just seems like anything that has to do with Nazis, he's in. He was in Inglourious Basterds. You know, that's, like, one of the most famous Nazi movies of all time. I'm sure if I really went through all of his filmography, there would be more. He's in a lot of German films. He's in Muppets Most Wanted. Can you guess who he plays?
A Nazi?
A German cop.
Okay.
Just, you know, I he was a perfect casting. I thought I knew him too. I was like, I know this guy. And no, I've never seen anything he's in, but I just think that was a perfect casting. Almost reminded me of like the dad from Iron Claw, where it's like, this guy just makes sense in this role. And I thought the Winston Churchill casting, I thought was hilarious. The guy who played that really leaned into it, and I thought it was quite funny actually. I thought that I didn't know the guy, Rory Kinnear. I thought he was funny as Winston Churchill. Maybe took it a little bit too serious. And the one guy who like ran the gambling ring, I thought he was pretty good in this too as well. I thought everyone was just good in this. How about that?
Yeah, a guy who ran the gambling ring.
The
agent.
He said he had the fake gambling ring or whatever.
Yeah, that was Heron. That was the dude that was in.
Oh, see, I was talking about the militia guy.
Militia guy
who had
Alex
his...
Pete Pettifer.
No, the guy who had all his soldiers, and they, you know, they went down to meet with him. And
oh, no, different dude.
I think it's Danny Sapani. Yeah, it's Danny Sapani. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, he was 53. Not. He was not in Dune. Different guy.
He looks very familiar. I feel like he looks like another actor. Can't tell you who, but he looks familiar. Because I thought I knew him too. This movie is the ultimate. I think I know that actor, but I actually don't. Movie. There's a few of them.
Yeah, I mean, they loaded up the cast with, you know, guys like that.
All directed by the guy everyone thinks they know, Guy Ritchie. I never gave my score. I gave it a 14 out of 20. I was actually pleasantly surprised by the cast in this.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I like a good ensemble cast. I don't think anyone weighed this movie down. I like the villain, great Nazi dickhead. I liked the gambling ring owner. I liked the girl. Obviously, really enjoyed Henry Cavill. Really enjoyed Alan Richson. Richson? That's a weird last name. I'm 1 point higher. I'm at 15 out of 20.
Okay. I will say Henry Cavill is working on his next movie, or at least on Wikipedia, is a movie called In the Gray, directed by Guy Ritchie, has Jake Gyllenhaal in it, and has Mrs. Fake Ana de Armas herself as well. So they are going to be reuniting for another movie, as well as Carlos Bardem, who may be related to Javier Bardem. He is. That's his brother. So another movie where we'll be like, oh, we know that guy. That's Javier Bardem. But it's like, oh, no, it's actually his brother, mm-hmm. Carlos.
No. Now I'm wondering, is Henry Cavill's issue is he likes working with Guy Ritchie too much?
Maybe.
He's done The Man Called Uncle, this movie. Now he's working with him again. Mm. And so he just, you know, it's movies that people don't always go out to watch. They aren't these big blockbusters. They do okay. But like, I don't know. Maybe Guy Ritchie's just a great guy on set. And it's like, fuck it. I don't got to be super famous. Just let's make fun movies together.
Mm. Guy's a good guy, maybe.
Yeah.
British people just stick together, I guess.
Much like in this film.
Very true. What are we at? We're at enjoyment already? Wow, this podcast has blazed by. Look, I had a lot of fun with this. So much so to the point where when we walked out of the theater, I was telling Riley, like, oh, what did I say? I forgot what I said. I said something. She's like, you actually liked that movie? I said, yes, I did. Why'd you say it like that? Like, this was a fun, enjoyable film. And I feel like...
I'm sorry. You just pulled the Jameis Winston right there. You said, I liked it so much that I said, what did I say? Man, I can't remember.
Look. I understand Jameis more now. Maybe there's a reason you like me and Jameis Winston. Maybe I'm more Jameis Winston than I like to admit.
Yeah, maybe, man. Oh, my God.
I've got 2 days of draft coverage in my freaking back pocket. My brain is fried right now. So I was teetering between two scores. I wanted to give it a 16, but then I was looking at our last two movies, which I gave both a 15. And I feel like they're all in the same ballpark, so I'm gonna keep it the same score. For the third week in a row, I enjoyed a movie 15 out of 20 on our scale.
Mm. Yeah, I gave Kong 16. Godzilla X Kong 16. I gave Civil War 15. And this one is more in the realm of Godzilla versus Kong or Godzilla X Kong. I don't know how to say it. The X really throws me off there. I think I liked it just a notch below that. So I'm also at a 15 out of 20. I think it was fun. I would have loved more dad action. If we would have gave me a little bit more of this team doing their thing, this could have been really, really good. But I still had a really good time with it. I think it's a very easy, fun watch. And you learned a little bit about World War II. So it's educational.
Yeah, learned a little bit of history. I kind of wish I took Gavin. I thought about taking it, but I saw it was R-rated. You also spelt ministry way wrong. Wow, you butchered that.
Minister. I'm a minister, too. That's a problem.
I wanted to take Gavin to this, but I was like, I don't know if there's like nudity or something. It's rated R. Wish I would have taken him because I think he would have loved this as well. It's fun for every age, Ty. I wound up with a score, 75 out of 100.
It doesn't happen as much as you would think. But I'm the exact same score as you, Jay. I'm at a 75 out of 100 on this. I think this was a lot of fun, above average film, easy watch. And yeah, I feel like that's a good score for this kind of movie. That's a real good score for this.
Yeah, I would agree. 275s. That's pretty funny.
275s giving us a combined score of, can you guess, Jay?
75.
Yeah, combined score of 75, making this the 94th ranked movie out of 223 films we have reviewed. It is with the likes of John Wick Chapter 4, No Time to Die, Civil War, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, all the exact same score.
Literally the same score as the movie we reviewed last week. Exact same score.
Yeah. Yeah, exact same score.
And they're back-to-back all...
back-to-back 75s.
We said it last week. They're all the same type of movie. Even The Creator, same type of movie. Dune 1, maybe not the same type of movie. You go up a little bit to 75 and a half. Project Power, Mad Max, just similar types of movies, man. Our scale is the best thing going for us, Ty, in our entire lives because it's so accurate.
Yeah. The only thing I will say, John Wick Chapter 4 needs to be higher. I need to rewatch that movie and figure out why I gave it a 76 and not in like the 80s plus.
Yeah, I can't tell you. It looks like we've only had the same score 13 times out of 223 movies, if I did my counting correct. So less than, that's what, 5% of the time?
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty rare.
Yeah, I'm shocked you gave John Wick a 76.
I have my breakdown on it. I gave it a 9 for story, which probably sounds right. There wasn't much of a story. 20 for key elements, 20 for cinematography, only a 10 for characters. John Wick was just kind of being John Wick. Maybe could have gone higher there. 17 for enjoyment. Upon hindsight, I'm definitely higher on enjoyment. That movie is so much fucking fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same story. Low for plot, low for characters. And my enjoyment wasn't as high because I said there was too much dead action.
I only gave it a 13. Insane thing to say. Too much dad action.
I'm not a dad yet, all right? I can only take so much dad action as a non-father. It's like, at some point, it's stolen valor, you know?
Jay, I will make you this promise. When you have a child, mm-hmm. once you're settled in, kids back home, you know, however long has gone by, I will come over and we will watch John Wick Chapter 4 together.
Okay.
And I think we'll really enjoy it.
All right. I'm surprised your first dad action movie with me, you don't want it to be Top Gun Maverick. When's the last time you watched Top Gun Maverick, Ty?
Oh, it's been too long, Jay. It's been way too long.
Are you going to watch it tonight? Didn't you just told me we were talking about a movie randomly, and that didn't that encourage you to watch it? You watched a random-ass movie? Rewatched?
I did just watch The Tomorrow War not too long ago.
Yeah.
I haven't spoken on it, but I've watched the entire Planet of the Apes franchise now.
Oh, you've seen 3. I still haven't seen 3.
Yeah. I finished 1 and 2, got really pissed off because 3 wasn't streaming anywhere. Went back like 2 days later and they added it onto streaming.
Oh, all of them have been on Riley's Fubo this whole time.
Oh, I've never logged into that.
Yeah. Number 3, I've heard it has a wild ending that almost got spoiled for us twice. Is it indeed wild?
I don't know. It was kind of what I was expecting. I wouldn't say it was that wild.
Interesting. Is it better than 2 and 1?
Yes, better than 1. I'll have to think on that. 2 and 3 are both pretty fun.
All right. Good to know. I'm excited because we got Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Before we talk about what we got coming up, though, is AI coming for our jobs, Ty? I've been complaining about how we teach history this entire time. So I told it, give me 5 more entertaining ways to teach history in school because we are breaking it. So I'm going to give you these 5. I want you to know. I want you to tell me if you'd be interested in this as a student. And not right now as adult Tyler. I want you to go back to high school Tyler Brain. And if I was telling you this as your teacher, what your response would be. Does that sound good?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Number 1, time travel simulation. Organize a time travel simulation where students are assigned historical personas and immerse themselves in various eras. They can dress up, adopt accents, and engage in role-playing activities such as debates, negotiations, or reenactments of significant events. This hands-on approach allows them to experience history firsthand and gain a deeper understanding of the past. Now, we did this a little bit in like 5th grade with Mr. Abadaka, but what are you thinking here?
I'm thinking I think me personally, even back then, would have had a good time with it. We did a couple like you got to be this country and you have these supplies and like simulation kind of things like that. I had a good time with it. An entire classroom of high schoolers, no fucking shot they're going to take that seriously and they're just going to dick around the entire time. Not going to be effective.
Oh, okay. So you're saying no.
Yeah, no, me personally, I think so. I could think that would be fun. I don't think there's any way you get a whole class to actually commit to the bit of like being a person and doing a thing. Everyone's just going to dick around. No one's going to take it seriously. It'll be a big flop.
All right. 0 for 1 for ChatGPT. Number 2, historical mystery games. Create historical mystery games where students must solve puzzles or unravel clues related to different historical periods or events. This could involve deciphering coded messages, examining primary sources, and piecing together evidence to uncover historical truths. The element of mystery adds excitement and encourages critical thinking skills. What do you think about historical mystery games?
I like it. I like it more. I just don't know how... It won't work for everything. But... could work for some things. I think when used with the proper historical event, I dig it. I'm giving it a yes.
For that, I think like hieroglyphics, that kind of stuff. Maybe you got to teach them some Morse code, you know, Morse code. You know, no one seems to know Morse code anymore. Maybe there's like some, you know, you got to know Morse code, and then you find out this like fact about the war, and then you got to relay that fact about the war to something else, and that leads to something else, and like you're actually like almost uncovering this mystery like step by step to like get the last clue, and along the way you're learning different historical facts that you then have to repeat to the teacher or whoever's next. Like that kind of plays.
Yeah, no, I think that works well. I think you have a couple of groups doing like their different assigned tasks, relaying things to other groups. That plays.
Number three, interactive digital storytelling. Use interactive storytelling platforms or virtual reality technology to recreate historical scenes or settings. Students can explore ancient civilizations, visit historical landmarks, or interact with virtual historical figures. By immersing themselves in these digital environments, they can visualize the past in a dynamic and engaging way. Look, I'll say it. I think this is what we are eventually leading to. Probably even after our kids are out of school, maybe when our kids' kids are in school. It might even be our kids' grandkids. But at some point, and maybe not that long, I think it'll be our kids' kids. By the time our kids' kids are in elementary school, they'll have like VR headsets in every classroom, and they'll be able, like, the technology will really be there with the AR and the VR to come up with these settings. Right now, I mean, classrooms can't even get fucking pens and pencils. I don't think our funding is going to get them an Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah, yeah, that's a real problem. Now, what I will say with this, I think it's a great idea. I think every student should know what it was like to be on the beaches of Normandy in World War II.
And any specific reason why? Are you big into Normandy?
No, I just know a lot of people died. I think we just give them, that's how you carry on generational trauma, is you make them relive it in virtual reality.
Gotcha. Maybe like
this is like you're just like role playing as your great, great, great grandfather at that point, carrying his buddy who's missing a leg and an arm. You just watch it get shot off and you have to carry him into cover.
Oh, this sounds traumatizing.
That could be good for history. Yeah, no, that's exactly what I said. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe like, yeah. Oh, and maybe they don't know what historical event they're going to. You know, they're just going and it's like something happens. You're like, bam. Now that, well, this might be like a survival class. I don't know if this is history class, but like, I don't know. I'm just strolling through the city. Plane hits the tower. What do I do now? You know, something like that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're out getting a slice. You look up. Boom. You're like, oh, my God, that had to have been an accident, right? Second plane hits.
What do you do? What do you do? You know, is this a thumbs up?
Yeah, no, this is definitely a thumbs up, I think, for all the wrong reasons. But
you know what's really cool with headsets? Roller coaster videos. I don't know why. I like watching a good roller coaster video on a headset. Now, I've never actually had a VR headset. I bought one of those ones where you just put your phone in it, and it's like a little cardboard box. Mm-hmm. The only thing I did with it was watch roller coaster videos one time at my parents' house when I bought it because I still live there. Never touched it again.
Yeah. I mean, we used the VR for golf and stuff.
Oh, good point. That's true.
We have used that, and I've used Brandon's for other things. VR headsets are dope.
Yeah, doesn't
not
seem...
Not those other things. That was way too long of a silence, Jay.
I thought that's where you were going.
No, it wasn't.
Number four. This kind of is the same thing as number two. Historical debates or mock trials. This is more of what we did in fifth grade. Organized debates or mock trials based on historical controversies or famous court cases. Assign students roles as historical figures, lawyers, or witnesses, and encourage them to research and present arguments from different perspectives. This not only fosters public speaking and research skills, good point, but also promotes critical thinking by examining conflicting viewpoints. Now, Ty, I already know if we did this, well, we did do this in fifth grade, but if we had free reign to do this in like high school, we would have got our biggest friend and we would have tried to do like a fake OJ trial and tried to put like kid size gloves on their hands and just said how the glove didn't fit. If it don't fit, acquit.
That's fantastic.
You know what I'm saying? I think we would have had too much creative freedom with this, but I guess that's the same thing as time travel simulation. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I did this exact thing in high school. But not like trial cases, but more just like wartime, like, oh, you fucking make treaties and bullshit like that. It's okay. I give it like a middle thumbs. It works. It was, I remember doing it. So like, that's something good. It's better than just like reading out of a book. But I don't know. It's fine.
Don't forget, I was your lawyer once.
You were. You're a terrible lawyer, but you were my lawyer.
Look. It's hard to lawyer for someone when you know they're guilty. You were there when they committed the crime. I should have.
Only the good lawyers know how to do good around that.
I should have encouraged you to take a guilty pleading and take a reduced penalty.
What you think the mafia lawyer who's there for all of the hits that get put on people and just watching people getting their knees bashed in, do you think he went to court and was like, look, man, I'm sorry. I was there. I saw it. I can't help you.
Nah, it seems like with mafia, they always just pick like their third cousin, like whatever. It's always like a little skinny guy who's only like 5'5". It's just the cousin that no one likes, and they just become the fall guy every time. I think that's how the mafia stays in business. They just have so many cousins, and there's always enough fall guys, you know?
You know, with my case, when I was in fifth grade class president, mm-hmm. I think I had the most to lose in that situation. I probably should have got a fall guy.
That might have been a better approach for us.
Someone who had nothing to lose, you know?
Are you saying me?
No, but I mean, if you think you had nothing to lose, if you wanted to be my fall guy, I would have let you.
I mean, I was the whole class president, you know, for all of fifth grade, not just our individual classroom. Yeah.
Just minuscule amount of power compared to my classroom president.
Look, you ran again. You got reelected. It made you a polarizing candidate, Ty. I think Donald Trump took some notes from Tyler Wooten with his presidential candidacy.
I mean, I was the best president.
All right, number five. So we had a middle thumbs up. I haven't been tracking. Historical field trips or outdoor activities. Take students on field trips to historical sites, museums, cultural heritage centers related to the curriculum. Alternatively, organize outdoor activities like scavenger hunts or archaeological digs where students can explore local history firsthand. By experiencing history outside the classroom, students connect theory with real-world contexts and develop a deeper appreciation for the past.
I mean, I guess. I think it's fun. It's just not very, like, practical. Like, I think, like, if you got a VR headset, you could do something a couple times a week with that. Mm-hmm, a couple mm-hmm. times a week, you got a course where you can go in and, like, see different things and be a part of different stuff. You can't go to on a fucking field trip a couple times a week. That'll nope. never work.
Nope. No, you cannot. We had some fun field trips growing up. We had our fifth grade class with Mr. Abadaka, where you were president. We took a lot of like extracurricular field trips, not through the school. Well, through the school, but not with the rest of the school. I mean, went to Johnson Air Force Base, went to LAX. I know there was a few other ones I didn't even go to, but we had some cool field trips. I still remember that Johnson Air Force Base field trip like it was yesterday. Not yesterday, but I vividly remember it and the sonic boom happening. Me and Riley just drove right next to it when we drove home from Monterey, and I was like, I've been here. And there was fighter jets flying, actually, when we drove on the freeway. I thought it was pretty sick.
That is pretty sick. Yeah, no, I agree. I think field trips are awesome. I think they are good. They do help with that kind of stuff. I don't know how well historical field trips play.
Yeah.
But I digress. But field trips are always good. Get the kids out of the classroom.
Well, we did the gold mining field trip in like fourth grade at Riley's Farms.
We did. Yeah, we had to like pan for gold.
I thought that was so lame. I was a stupid ass kid. I thought we were panning for real gold. I don't know why. I was like, I'm going to be rich today, Mom. I'm fucking bringing home gold. You know, I'm pretty sure.
You were finding the fake plastic and like throw it into your pocket and not letting anyone see.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure when we went on the field trip, it was during the economic recession of 2008 and 2009. So I was really looking forward to, you know, panning for gold and pulling my weight around the house. But unfortunately, yeah. I couldn't add anything to the equation.
Yeah, during that recession, if you would have hit big there, you could have bought a house.
Yeah, for sure. Bad timing to take fourth graders on a field trip panning for gold during a recession. Maybe some are saying.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
What do you think? Is ChatGPT coming for our teachers' jobs, Ty?
No, not yet. Those were all mediocre ideas except for VR, which I feel like is inevitable. I feel like they didn't think of that. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, that's 100% going to happen. There's so much cool stuff that's going to happen with VR. We don't need to get down the rabbit hole, Ty, but I'm excited for the future of AR. I'm also excited for our podcast next week. What are we reviewing?
Next week, Jay, we're reviewing a movie that I had on my highly anticipated list and got flamed for.
Yeah, you did.
Really horny movie, but hear me out.
Very.
Challengers. Zendaya, other people. Mm-hmm. Just Zendaya. The tennis movie.
Yeah, tennis romance. Look, against all odds. Oh, Google's just wrong. Has an 88%. Critic score. That's pretty good. Google said 97. That just wasn't right. But way higher than I still ever would have gave it credit for. Now, it's only made $2.7 million in the box office. But oh, it's actually out today.
It was like a one-day early preview main release today.
All right. I take my shit talking back then. We'll see how it does in theaters.
Yeah. Should make a lot of money. I have no idea when this is going to come out. Is this when we're going to be delayed, or are we good for this next week?
I'm pretty sure we're good for next week. I am starting my honeymoon next Friday, so obviously going to have to record before then.
Yeah,
I'm going to be gone for 3 weeks' time. We haven't really, we're kind of talking about it live on the podcast right now. Haven't talked about what we're doing, if we have a plan. I've had some ideas. I don't mind recording at least one pod on the honeymoon, but I can't bring all my recording equipment, so that would mean you... us discording, you would have to have the recording equipment. Now I know you're also moving during all this, so I guess
correct.
That does make it easier to maybe just bring the stuff to your house. I mean, you don't even need the mic stands. All you really need is the board, one mic, the headphones, and then the cord to plug in the board, obviously, and then you could just hold the mic. That's what I did in Orlando. I just held the mic like I was a stand-up comedian. So, but then you got to edit, Ty, and like, not to pull a peek behind the curtain, but I'm our editor, so like I'd have to maybe teach you some things, or you'd have to send me the file and then I'd have to edit it because I have all the intro and stuff. So I don't know what we're doing.
And you haven't even hit on the biggest issue of the like 10-hour time difference.
Oh yes, we'll be 8 hours apart, 9 hours I believe when we're in Paris and Amsterdam. I could be wrong about that, but at least 8 hours the whole time. So, yeah, it would have to be like a, I don't know. I mean, you're usually off Mondays, so it'd have to be like a Monday at like 2 p.m. or something when it's like I'm getting ready for bed and I don't have any plans anymore and it's just mid-afternoon on your day off. So definitely some logistical roadblocks.
We're going to find out, but in the meantime, go watch Challengers.
Yes.
And we'll record that next week.
I also had another idea. Haven't asked this person at all. Haven't even talked to you about it. Had this idea of maybe I have a fill-in co-host. You know, maybe you do it with, I don't know. Does Vic want to test her podcasting chops? If not her, does Ben's always complaining about him not being on the podcast? I don't know how he'd be as a podcast host. Josh has been on the podcast to talk a movie, so maybe he's an option. Your father, obviously, that would never work. Miko, I don't know. No. There could be a fill-in, stand-in host. I don't want you to ever do it solo. I think that would just be bad, but who knows?
Hey, man, I will say the following week, got a little rom-com action. I'll talk about a rom-com all by my damn self if I have to.
Yeah. Are we missing big movies? That's the other question is, like, if there's movies to miss, then I'm not worried about it. But I don't want to miss
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. See, and I've already looked at fucking IMAX theaters in Liverpool to see that. So, like, yeah.
Maybe we just do one. That's the one. We take a little, you enjoy your vacation, we don't stress, we'll figure it out.
Yes, we will, Ty. But that might have to include you taking podcasting equipment to your new place. So we probably should figure it out sooner rather than while I'm already halfway across the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, 100%. We'll lay the groundwork. Maybe I just take all the shit home with me after we record next week.
Oh yeah, you're going to be here next week. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah, makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, it does. Well, I got nothing else for you, Ty.
This is fun. Go watch Challengers. Try to not be horny while watching that movie. In the meantime, be a good friend, everybody.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.